Hey, y'all, you're back. Jackie, you want to tell the people what's up?
Hey, y'all, glad to be back. And on today's episode, we speak with Associate Professor in the Department of Psychology, Dr. Jermaine Awad, about a study that focuses on how Black women view their own body imagery.
Yes, because people don't believe Black women's complaints about negative perceptions of us and their effects unless you give them cold, hard facts.
Ooh. Was you throwing a little shade? What was that?
Just a little. I'm just a little upset. It's a little wired up today. I'm sorry. Anyway, we're also going to hear some amazing poetry slam from writer, playwright, and touring performer Ebony Stewart. You ready?
Yes. Wakanda forever!
Can you not? Like, why are you so extra? Don't nobody want to hear all that.
You're ruining my show!
You know, I think she's actually pretty good.
I don't pay you to think. This girl does not have the look. The look. Who says that's the only look? You make people feel bad if they don't look like that. No one looks like that.
I don't even look like that.
Because in case you haven't noticed, people come in all shapes and sizes, and they're all beautiful.
Tell it, girl! Speak the truth!
Put that in your magazine.
Dr. Jermaine Awad, who's an associate professor in the Department of Psychology at UT, researches factors that lead to discrimination of ethnic minorities and its impact. She focuses primarily on Arab Middle Eastern Americans and African Americans.
She conducted a study titled Beauty and Body Image Concerns Among African American College Women, and the title is pretty much self-explanatory.
Yeah, and she and her team surveyed more than 30 women here at UT between the ages of 19 and 25 about their own body image concerns.
And although we know that all Black women in college don't represent every Black woman.
Yeah, so chill out.
Dr. Awad says she targeted this particular population because college women are sort of setting the stage for the future, and they allow access to some of the most contemporary and emerging views on body image.
In the eating disorder and body image literature, it mostly focuses on white women. And when they include Black women or Latino women or Asian women, it's usually in comparison to how they're functioning to white women, right? Compared to white women. And a lot of times people have this belief or this assumption that Black women are buffered against body image concerns, right? Because of the notion that bigger body sizes are more accepted. If you are talking about heterosexual relationships, that curvier, thicker women are more likely to be celebrated, that they're essentially that women, like African-American women, are buffered against eating disorder issues, right? And the problem is that when you're defining body image just about making it about body size, you're actually missing the picture for African-American women and other women of color.
Dr. Awad really out here speaking some facts, okay? She letting everybody know what's up.
Right. And instead of talking about what our concerns are in comparison to someone else's standards, she emphasizes what's important to us, which we already know, but for those who don't.
Hair concerns actually emerged as the number one concern in this sample of Black women, right? So it was greater than body size and skin tone and other issues. And so this idea that not only are Black women judged based on their hair, but it's also commented on to a much higher degree than any other group of women, including other groups of women of color, right? And so what we saw, you know, the major sub-themes, you know, in this category, you know, espouse both positive sub-themes and some negative sub-themes. So some of the positive sub-themes were, you know, talking about how versatile their hair is and how that, you know, how it's seen as like a great strength and a benefit, right? And also this notion of, you know, just being able to express yourself through your hair and feeling that you get to do that more than other groups may be able to.
I am not my hair. I am not this skin.
Jackie.
I am not your expectations.
Jackie.
No.
Okay, I understand. Okay, bro, I understand that you're feeling it. Are you feeling it?
Yes,
you feeling it?
Yes, very much so.
Okay, then I'm going to need you to feel it like not. Like, I need you to stop.
You always hating on me.
I'm not hating, Jackie. Oh, I'm just really trying to push you forward and keep you going because you just, you extra, like, you had a 10. You need to bring it down
you
to like
a 2.
You know
what? I'm actually not
That's all
extra.
I'm
Asking. You're just not enough.
All right. And
I don't know.
Continuing
where I read
this educated conversation.
Okay. Now, Dalia, we go over the extraordinary flexibility of our coils and coolness and locks of love, but of course, we have to go over the negative.
You know, some of the participants talked about this notion that people assumed they knew their personality by the type of hairstyle that they had. Right. So that if if a woman wore natural hairstyle, that they're probably, have a higher identity or like to do certain things or even like more artistic. It was really interesting what they felt like the judgments were being made about their personality and characteristics based on hairstyle. They also talked about some of the negative things were the sacrifices that were being made, not only financial sacrifice to go and constantly do upkeep, but other forms of sacrifice where, you know, if you did spend so much money getting your hair done, then you're probably, you know, then you're less likely to also go work out, for example, because you don't want to ruin your hairstyle or you don't want to swim, for example, was something that was brought up. And so there was, you know, sacrifices in terms of money, in terms of time, in terms of sort of activities that you can do. And the largest theme was, and most of the women actually brought this up, 22, in fact, this notion of ignorance and microaggressions against women, right, pertaining to their hair. So people coming and obviously touching your hair, thinking they can touch your hair, asking questions or not understanding, you know, when someone has a weave or thinking they can talk about it all the time. I think that was the theme that really came up over and over, feeling that, you know, Black women's hair was a topic of interest that was appropriate, right? And that somehow Black women had to be the ambassadors to explain, like, oh, yes, this is what happens with Black women's hair. And let me explain to you who, you know, doesn't understand this. And it's, you know, feeling like people thought it was their responsibility to explain and having to deal with that, which was certainly a hassle. That came up over and over. We did have someone in our samples really interesting that said essentially that, you know, they felt like they were so invested in obviously that their hair looking good that they went out and took an emergency loan to get a weave, right? And so it's really concerns relating to hair run much deeper than any type of beauty and body image concerns for Black women.
Do you know how many times I've literally had to deal with that stereotype of like being a militant or just like artsy fartsy just because I am like a natural, you know, like when I was, so in high school, I was the only Black girl in swim. Aww. Let's give us a moment of silence.
Shout out but to yeah. Simone who killed it in the Olympics last year. The swimmer.
Simone. Mm-hmm. Anyway, back to the whole point. Yes. So like I was in swim, which one of my mom was like one of the first ones to like not want me to be in swim because of my hair. And so because I was constantly getting in the chlorine, I couldn't do like, you know, permed hair or relaxed hair. So I started to do natural hair and I started to transition. And so like a lot of the kids at the high school, whatever, would make fun of my hair or like my edges. And, you know, like one of the like names that I really remember that stuck with me was like Erica Badu. And I just want to let you know, Asia, that I'm not gonna let that affect me. I'm gonna just let that build me up, but I still love you, whatever.
What's Asia last name?
No, can you stop being messy? Like, can you stop? No, go. What about you?
Okay, so for me, I just went natural, I think maybe 3 years ago? I really can't remember because it was an accident.
Not an accident.
But so I have more of a 4C type of hair. So my hair isn't necessarily like as smooth. It's more typically coarse. And so, of course, people tell me, you know, my hair isn't acceptable for the workplace, or it just doesn't look professional. When we were on, like, you may never be able to be on TV and wear your natural hair, like things like that. And so, If I didn't love my hair, then I would think that it was a negative thing. And honestly, in the past, I did hate my hair. I felt like I grew up thinking that if I didn't have a perm, then I wasn't pretty. So if you do go back and look at some of my tweets, they're a little ignorant, but...
But you know what?
Better.
There's growth. There's growth.
Definitely.
You know,
definitely.
you were crazy, you know, ignorant to what natural hair can do. Natural hair is
definitely.
Still expensive, but that's not the point. That's not the point.
The point is that I know better, and now I'm natural. My hair is blue now.
Yes.
I wear my natural hair. I haven't worn weave in like a year.
Yes.
Like, I don't know.
Yes.
Like, I love my...
Keep
my
it
mama
going,
calls
sis.
Me fist and froze.
Okay. All right. Anyway.
So moving on with this conversation, Dr. Awad even briefly mentions acculturation and how the way we view our body size and shape often depends on how much we identify with the Black culture. So being skinny often isn't the main concern, is being curvy in the right places.
So like a slim thick.
Yeah. You, girl, that's you.
With your cute...
Even though there's greater acceptance of larger body sizes, when you delve deeper into that, it's actually not like an acceptance of obesity, right? Or being heavy. It's an acceptance of having bigger breasts, bigger hips, bigger butt, small waist. And it is almost impossible to exercise yourself into that body type. Okay. And so in a lot of ways, the hourglass ideal that a lot that tends to be the idealized body image for Black women is much harder to attain than that thin ideal. Okay. So then when you see that women have that and it's not natural, it's usually because of plastic surgery. Right. And so it's one of those things that the hourglass figure overall through history with all sorts of women has been hypersexualized, right? But when we talk about, you know, Black women's concerns specifically, you also have the history of slavery that essentially commodified Black bodies, right? And, you know, these stereotypes about Black women, especially in the United States, started around slavery, in the times of slavery, where you had slave owners hypersexualizing their female slaves, right? And then this gets, you know, perpetuated. And this notion, again, really has roots in slavery and how Black bodies were, again, like I said, commodified. Nowadays, I think, you know, you tend to, you know, people tend to see Black women as being exotic, you know, also, you know, fetishized in a lot of ways. And we see this all the time. We see this in how Black women are represented in the media. We see this also, you know, it's really common on college campuses, this notion of, you know, of hypersexualization. And, obviously, there's roots to this before slavery in Africa as well, when, you know, you had colonizers going in and putting, for example, the Hottentot Venus on display, right? And so it's just there's a long history of this with Black women, and it manifests itself in really interesting ways in contemporary, you know, times.
So Dr. Awad expands on the idea of hypersexualization of Black women and how that affects the way we present ourselves. So, for example, my grandma always used to get on to me for like wearing shorts. But like, if you know me and if you ever seen me, I'm like 6 feet tall and like 80% of my body is leg. So whatever I wear is always going to be short. It's always going to be like 3 or 5 inches off. But, you know, she always used to tell me, you know better than wearing this and blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, OK, grandma. And then my mom was the same. same thing, like same way. She would always be like, you know, ladies are not supposed to be wearing this. You're supposed to be presented a certain way because you don't want people to think about you like this. Did you ever have like that issue as well?
Yeah, definitely. My mom always tries to police what I wear, and we bash on ideas about that because I feel like the way I dress shouldn't reflect the type of person that I am. Like, just because I want to wear shorts, it can be because it's hot outside, not because I want people to see my butt. But I definitely agree with her in how we have a history of being hypersexualized. Black women are always over-sexualized, and even growing up in school, I don't know if you felt like you were singled out more.
Oh, for sure.
For wearing things.
Because that, like, yeah, my body like, shape, oh, for sure isn't just like regular white skinny girls, yeah, right? I'm like, I'm cornbread fit. You know what I'm saying? Like,
mm-hmm. And what's 3 inches on you is not exactly, what's 3 inches on exactly me. And so it's like that, the whole idea of just like dress code is just ugh to me. But I definitely had that issue, you know, at my last job, because when I say during the summer, it's hot. We went to Texas State. Mm-hmm. You know about the stairs. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just comfortable to
the
wear
shorts. The mountains you had to climb.
Exactly. And so as a student worker, everyone was wearing shorts, but it was like one day I got an email, not even a conversation, an email that was like, hey, Jackie, please see the attached student code handbook. You're not allowed to wear shorts to work. And so thankfully I had advocates that were like, first of all, what's 3 inches on you is not what's 3 inches on her. And if she can't wear shorts, mm-hmm, then nobody can wear shorts.
Then nobody. Exactly. And you better see it.
Yeah. And it was just because I was black. That's the only reason why she was picking on me. And I was like, oh, girl, whatever.
Okay. All right.
So, Dalia, do you feel uncomfortable because of this? And do you kind of police your own way that you dress?
Yeah. Like, even to this day, I still kind of do it. But I've gotten a lot, like, more carefree about it. So like I said earlier, I'm like 6 foot, but I'm also a very busty woman. And I also like very low cut t-shirts because I think, mm-hmm, I look very good in them, and I think I look great.
You do, girl.
Thanks, Rant. Boost. But yeah. But yeah. Yeah, sometimes I just feel like, because of the way that it's been just drilled in our heads of a way that we're supposed to dress, I sometimes feel self-conscious because I don't want to perpetuate a lot of the stereotypes or a lot of the ways that people view black women when it comes to the way that we show off our bodies.
And you know, and you shouldn't even be afraid of that, because it's not you that has the problem, it's them that has the problem.
Oh, like, exactly.
You should be able to wear a low-cut shirt and people be like, oh, she just want people to see her boobs. Like, no.
Exactly. No.
I'm like, I look good in this.
They look good. They look great. They look like they're happy. They're just sitting there enjoying life and trying to live life to its fullest.
And you worried about what's going on with us.
Exactly. These boobs won't be the same forever. And you know, I'm trying to get as much out of them as I can.
Tia Mari talked about on The Real about how when she was younger, she always felt this way that like, I had to be a lady. I had to dress this specific type of way. And she's like, when I look back on these pictures and I look back at I'm like, that was when my body was in its best shape.
Yeah.
I should have just worn what I wanted
exactly.
to wear. Because I'm never going to be built like this.
Yes, exactly.
Which is why if I want to wear a thong kini and cowboy,
okay.
I'm gonna do it.
All right.
And ain't nobody gonna
I'm about to rebuke this conversation in the name of Jesus, because you are acting up.
And you're being rude to me.
There's a lot of racial socialization type of themes that came up in this study, you know, that you had both positive themes about Black beauty being passed down from families to, you know, their children, right? And then you also have negative themes, right? Sort of an espousal of like European beauty ideals, you know, this... notion of, you know, well, don't get darker, you know, make sure you're not in the sun because we don't want you any darker. So it came up a lot with skin. Also came up this idea, like you mentioned, of having to look put together, you know, was a common theme that emerged over and over again, because essentially, you know, these parents know what the impacts of racism. And so you cannot make any mistakes. And one of those things is that you need to make sure that you're presenting yourself in the best possible way, right? So even when you think about, you know, Christian, Black Americans, you talk about the Sunday best, right? You go to church and you're wearing your best, right? And so the self-presentation not only is about, you know, wanting to physically look good on the outside, but it's also in some ways a buffer against the racism and the prejudice that is going to be experienced out in the world, right? And parents wanted to send that message down to their both their daughters and their sons about you need to present yourself in a professional way so that you are protected, right? And we see, you know, an extreme version of this with Trayvon Martin and the hoodie, right? And so you have these themes coming down for a lot of different reasons. Not only that, you know, looking good is important, but also for safety and for, you know, the sense of wanting to, you know, lessen the chances that you'll be discriminated against because, you know, they're quite aware of the negative stereotypes that people have towards, you know, Black bodies and Black Americans, right?
I can't tell you how many times I've literally been yelled at as a child or fussed because I know when my mama listens to this episode, she's going to talk about, you always trying to make me out to be the bad person. You always trying to make me seem like the worst mother in the world. So let me say it. Fussed at me for not wearing like belt or like earrings whenever I left the house for the day. And like to this day, I feel naked if I'm not wearing either one of those things.
Yeah, I definitely feel naked without earrings. But I definitely remember once I started getting in high school, my great grandma would be like, you need to put some earrings in your ear. You need to put some makeup on your face. You look like a little boy. Like, you need to, you know, you need to spruce it up.
Oh, yeah. Like, my mama, she would always, like, try to get me not to wear makeup, but she always just wanted us to be, like, well-kept and, like, well-looking. Because, you know, of course, like, we already are kind of different in certain spaces and areas and try not to stick out like a sore thumb.
Does your family have any, like, jokes that are, like, you can tell that they're kind of messed up, that they might have been cool back in the day, but like now it's like, okay, like this is kind of messed up. Cause my family does, like they have like a joke that's like, mm-hmm. Oh, if mama was to see your boyfriend, she'd be rolling around in your grave, like because of how dark he is, or like they always say, like, I guess her ideal was that you need to date someone lighter than you so you can have like pretty babies. And yeah. It's like,
oh, well, my family used to tell me all the time growing up that I was shaped like a white girl. So I'm going to just leave that right there. And I'm going to let every one of my family members think about that and the way that they used to treat me and all the houses I'm not going to buy.
Oh, my God. So one time at my family's house, we were playing gestures. And so I stood up there and I'm getting my cards ready. And my cousin starts yelling at me. She's like, a stick, a pole, a lightning tree. Like, oh, I wasn't even doing the game yet. But she calls me sticks. Like, she calls me sticks. Always has, always will.
But, you know, that's so weird. like Dr. Awad kind of, like, talked about as well is, like, you know, it depends on, like, what part of like Black, how much you identify with Black culture, right? So like you've always been considered like a stick because you've been surrounded by, you know, like Black people constantly, right?
A lot of the women in my family are thicker, so
yeah. And so like for me my mama always used to like be like I was too thick, but whenever I went, like, I'm already from the country, but like from when I went back off into the sticks to go visit like my other family, they would intentionally like fatten me up because they said that I was too skinny. So it was just kind of like, you know, like, well, I'm just sitting here hanging around, you know. just trying to do me. So thank you, Dr. Awad. You out here wrecking necks, you know, throwing, snatching wigs. Thanks. And of course, you know, I had to ask her the traditional question.
The most important question.
Of course. How do you feel about Beyonce?
Beyonce, of course, is a great entertainer and I feel like is actually a pretty complicated figure. She's beloved, I would say. It's very rare that I would meet a woman that does not love Beyonce.
You can find Dr. Awad on the Twitter sphere at Dr_GGAwad. That's Dr_GIGIAWAD.
Also, you can find her work at www.ggawad.com. Spell like the Twitter name, but just GGAwad without the underscore and the doctor. Ebony Stewart is from Baytown, Texas, which is right outside of Houston. She's a performance arts, spoken word poet, and artist. She's the only adult female 3-time slam champion in Austin.
I'm a creator. I love to create work. I love to be a part of the arts and whatever truth-telling I need to tell through story or poem or playwright or whatever is the best medium for me at the time. The experience of being a Black woman in America in itself doesn't necessarily change no matter where you go. You still have the same kind of instances or people get on your nerves type stuff, you understand what I mean? But like the idea of being Southern is that, you know, people think of women, Southern women, as supposedly like these Southern belles or these very submissive beings. And so we get treated a little differently in that regard. But also I think just as a sense of like walking around as a Black woman, you're always having to stay ready. You're always having to carry yourself in a manner to where, you know, people ain't gonna bother you none, right? But I was able to pay a little bit more attention and of course get smarter in the ways that I'm noticing things. I've been trying to get used to shouting myself out and giving myself props. So, you know, as the 2017 Women of the World Slam champion, you know, representing Texas, I just want to say thank you so much to everybody that's been supportive of me.
4 women, 4 Negro women, 4 women who have different colors. Nina Simone, my skin is black, my arms are long, my hair is woolly, my back is strong, oh, strong enough to take the pain inflicted again and again. Black angels are descending. In my mother's words, are divided into quadrants in a single plat. She interlaces stories, arranges strength, and teaches patterns, gifts. Hands no longer hands, they're a technique. Transferring information, I am nappy around my edges, saying my roots haven't always been free. My mother says we laid across each other like shackled barrettes on slave ships, and they killed the natives, so she wasn't told how many times we've been called out our names. Said my grandmother sung strands of gospel. Anyway, Negro spirituals, in the way she braids, she is beautiful. In the way she braids, weaving mistakes to remind me there will always be a hair out of place and there will never be enough time to fix it. So tread lightly, braid carefully. She, my mother, uses words like rivers made up of tears. I can still feel the waves of how many times she wanted to cry but refuses to acknowledge pain as an intricate pleat of beauty. So I ask, could I just be a ponytail, mama? Braids take too long. They too complicated and my head hurts. She told me that wasn't her, that's society. That some people are more comfortable with us walking narrow, looking fine. She says when your hair's a mess, they think your life is too, and I should have given them the satisfaction of knowing my business better than me. My mother uses one hand to keep me in place while the other hand is a rubber band pulled tight like grandma's grip on family. She makes a knot and says, this is a fist. For whenever you are weak, you are also strong. And I wanted to go back, look back to when I was more than just a color, light skin, dark skin. Ebony is always in. My mother calls me pretty. She says all Black girls are, and how could our hair not be the source of what makes us grow? Don't be brittle in your strength, just character based on length. You have no idea what I did to get here in this moment. I am a woman. And the only difference is the way I hold my head, and even that was inherited. See, tomorrow we could start over, but today we gotta walk like we flawless with a theme song. And so when I'm undone, when I'm naked in the sunlight, holding the moon in the palm of my hand, we are linked up. And my mother is still transferring information through gifts we call hands.
You can find Ebony in Austin at the Vortex March 9th for the release of her new book, Homegirlhood, a body of work that includes her poems. More of her work can be found at ebpoetry.com and the To and Fro website. Also give her a follow on Twitter at ebpoetry. So Jackie, now that we're at the end of the show, what is your to and fro moment?
My to and fro moment is actually coming from something that we talked about earlier that happened to my coworker. Our email was sent to him that wasn't sent to him that contained racist and xenophobic language. And yeah. It's just kind of like, an awareness that these I've never for one second doubted that these things weren't happening. And it's just the fact that it's not shocking at all, but
yeah.
How do I put this into words?
It solidified what you were thinking the whole time.
It solidified what I was thinking the whole time, but it's also just like a moment to me that you should not be forced to work with people who think this way. Mm-hmm. You should not be forced to deal with them. And if someone doesn't believe in the same values as you, take your money away if you can. I know some things are inescapable, but to me, this right here was like, you know what? Why don't we find somebody else who does bomb websites and they're, you know, on the up and coming, looking for people like that instead of dealing with people who have these views. And just also how to be an ally, because it wasn't said about me, but I still felt some type of way. Like when we were talking earlier, I was getting kind of mm-hmm. emotional because I'm like, I'm sorry that he had to go through this, but just how to be there as to support someone when they're going through something like that.
Exactly. Me, mine is, of course, always about just like self-care and taking care of yourself. But it's also about like learning on when to have fun and when to get down to work. Right. And so like I'm like at the stage in my life where I have.
Are you trying to shade me?
Wow. Everything is not oh my God. Everything is not about you, Jacqueline Carter. Everything is not.
I'm sorry.
I'm just out here trying to live my life. I've been telling you, okay. We out here. I've just been trying to tell you that. But anyway, it's about just like trying to find the balance of like just knowing when to not be on high alert and when not to try to grind it out and when how to. And I think I'm in that part of my career right now where I'm trying to like have more fun, but I'm also trying to like keep that work ethic, right? The work ethic that I've always had without being ashamed of when I do have my downtime. So I guess it's just like valuing my downtime a lot more and trying to have more of it and not feeling ashamed of doing it.
No, self-care is important, and you're one of the hardest people, working people I know, so.
You better stop. Look at you. Stop it. It's going to get emotional. Anyway.
That's why I don't compliment people often.
Well, that's the end of the show.
Make sure to tell your friends about us. We're streaming everywhere you find your podcast. Follow us on Twitter at The To and Fro and like our page on Facebook.
Music by Honey Banks. Follow her on Twitter at Miss Chris Honey B.
And Dalia, do you have something to leave the peoples with today?
Yes, honey. How you gonna itch something you ain't ready to scratch for?
What?
Just keep it on.
What?
Keep going. Okay. Keep doing what you're doing. All right. Bye, y'all.
Bye.